welcome to Arya Talking to Me, a Game of Thrones podcast. My name's Ben Vanell. I'm a comedian. I live in Melbourne, Australia. And I am joined on the line by my good friend, Adam Knox. Hello, Adam Knox.
Hello, Ben. I'm here on the line, live on the scene, ready to explain to you what is going on down here. A lot of chaos and confusion because I haven't thought of a situation that I could be reporting on.
I thought you were going to definitely go for a situation from Game of Thrones.
There's a young fat man baking heaps of pies. This is the most boring possible scenario.
Yeah, you're doing like the human interest story at the end of the news. And a small fat boy has cooked 17 pies in a row.
Some people think that fat boys only like to eat food. Well, this boy's breaking the trend by making food. when he could fucking put the pie down for a goddamn second.
Oh, yes. Hot pie. What a character.
What a gross-sounding name, too.
Yeah.
I don't know if that's just, like, my fault for years of internet consumption.
But Yeah, no, that's fair. God, he sucks so bad. That stupid direwolf he made for Arya.
Yeah, apparently it tasted good, though.
Well, I guess that's the point of a pie, or whatever it was.
Some weird, like, cookie thing.
Yeah, yeah, just a like bad sour. Like what's the other Australian one that we make? A damper.
Anzac biscuit. Oh, damper.
Yeah, yeah. Which is just the easy. It's just like yeast, flour, and like salt and water, I think.
Yeah, right.
I guess that's bread, but hot pie, you suck.
It's how I like my meadows, a little bit damper.
Oh yeah, okay. Bit of dew on the daisy.
Nah. Keep them where they live.
All right. That's enough fucking around. We've got an episode of Game of Thrones to talk about.
I'm ready to do it. Season 3 rolls on with episode 6, The Climb.
Yes. I'm pretty sure we've spoken about the eponymous climb speech before, and maybe we can get more into that in spoilers, but let's just get rolling into that recap, shall we?
Yeah, I think we've definitely like talked about it in the sealed section, and now it's here, so everybody's catching up to us.
Yeah. Speaking of catching up, we catch up with both of our favorite character in the show, a young Samwell Tarly.
Oh.
He's just proving once again why he is the best character in this show by being an awkward little dick.
Yeah, right. So what was he doing at the start of this episode? Remind me.
He was just sitting around the campfire with Gilly. They're looking at Dragonglass and he's like, I think this might mean something, but, you know, I'm not exactly sure. I've read about it in a book. And then he sings a lullaby.
Yeah, I remember him singing to the little baby.
Yep.
And his singing voice is so annoying.
It really is. It's like it's so... that thing that you always say about him, that he feels like a character who exists in the modern world, is only underlined more in this scene, where he just feels completely out of place in the world they're trying to build.
Oh, he's the Martin Lawrence of Game of Thrones, in that he has been flung back in time.
Yeah.
And is a black knight.
That's right. And is not black funny being, or entertaining.
No. Black being the mood he puts me in.
Yep, totally
just
fair.
A down, grim mood.
Yeah, just not pleased to be experiencing him on your screen. That's really all there is to that scene as well. It's just a little bonding scene.
Yeah, and I feel bad for like... Look, I'm sure the actor himself is a nice guy.
I'm sure.
But man, he is really making this character someone who I dread seeing every week.
Yeah, I agree. And it's, you know, in a show that's really, really, what's the word I'm looking for? Consistently good across the board, for him to be kind of annoying and for that to be kind of the worst thing of the show speaks pretty well to the show's quality.
Yeah. I think that's the thing. It's that he's that like the character is just an unrealized thing. I mean, we've talked about it before, but there's something about it's not that the traits of his well painted character are unlikable. It's that there's something out of place and missing about that character.
Yeah, yes. Yeah, absolutely. Let us spend no more time on his character then and move on to the next scene.
So, Ygritte, is this the Ygritte scene? I'm looking at a different thing. I'm still, I have to say, I'm down at, I just moved out of my house today. And so I am doing this on a shoestring budget.
That's right. And, you're like Bran. You're traveling the countryside with a band of misfits.
Yes, Ben. But what happens next in the show?
Yeah, it's the Ygritte scene. No, it is that scene with Meera and Osha, and they're skinning rabbits.
And
they're having a Osha rabbit skinning contest.
Osha is clearly better.
Yes,
but Meera won't let it go. Just admit that she's better. Like, they're bickering, and I don't know why. And it annoyed Bran as much as it annoyed me because they've only got each other. Don't you realize that you're in love?
It seems like a kind of old fashioned, like pitting the girls against each other sort of scene, which does not play well in the light of a progressive society. Like, even in terms of it being a fiction, it's just like there's literally no reason for them to be bickering or fighting.
Yeah, the girls are skinning these rabbits and like kind of snipping at each other's heels while the boys just sit around having fits. As it. Always
classic boys will be having boy fits. But yeah,
my husband didn't come home until 3 a.m. last night. He was out shaking around.
I could smell the piece of wood they put between his teeth to stop him biting his tongue off.
He told me he just tumbled down the side of a mountain, but I know that he was shaking around, having a fit.
But you're right, Jojen has a fit. He has a bloody seizure.
And Meera has clearly seen this before. This is like a side effect of his sight, his premonitions, and whatever, his whatever sort of magic thing is going on in his brain and soul has negative side effects for him. And this freaks Bran out as well, because he's like, oh, fuck, well, this is the thing I have. I'm just at the beginning of it, so am I heading towards Fit Town?
That's right, and he's got no legs as well. So
yeah, true.
He's going to be in an awful way.
Yeah. But, yeah, I don't think we really get anything out of it other than... Well, what does he see? Jojen sees, like... does he even say what he sees in this scene?
Oh, I don't think so.
But he doesn't look happy.
I think he says he saw Jon.
Oh, yeah, right. He just says, I saw Jon Snow at the wall. And Bran's like, oh, wow, that was worth a seizure.
Yeah.
My brother who's in the fucking Night's Watch is at the wall. Whoa!
Yes, exactly.
Oh yeah, and Rickon like piped up for once in this
yeah
scene.
Yep, we're reminded that Rickon exists. He's still alive. He's a little kid, and that's about all that happens with Rickon.
Yeah, but Jon Snow is at the wall.
He certainly is.
Him and Ygritte are up there getting ready to fucking scale that motherfucker.
Yes, that's right, because they've been put into the party that's going to climb the wall. They're going to climb the wall. And what are they doing? They're going to go and have a look around on the other side, right? Are they going to look at Castle Black? I forget what they were told to do.
Yeah, they're scouting because like they still don't believe John's, or like they kind of half do and half don't believe John's telling them that there's like 1,000 people at Castle Black.
Yeah,
he's maintaining that lie.
Yeah,
and it is a lie, right? We haven't just seen too few of them. Like, there are not 1,000 people there.
No, it's definitely a lie. It's like there's 100. There's 100 or less, including like all those new recruits. So it's
Gareth is being like real dickish to him.
Yes,
and then Ygritte is. Ygritte sees through him.
Yeah,
she's like, you're a loyal kid. You're not gonna betray your Night's Watch. Like, I know that you didn't fucking come up here and immediately stop being a crew.
Yeah, totally. That's like, you're right. She says she sees that he's a bad liar. He's too honest to get away with it. he's I don't know, like in terms of like as a viewer, it seems like he might be loyal to the Night's Watch just because, like, because he's flawed in the same way Ned is, where he's just like, well, I've picked something and I'm gonna go along with it. I've taken an oath, so I guess I won't break it. But surely, like, every day is giving him more reasons to not be a Night's Watchman anymore.
Sure, but he'd fetishize the Night's Watch since he was like a kid. He always wanted to go and join it, right?
Yes, so, yeah, that's true, yeah.
A couple of shitty dudes being there isn't going to make him stop yet. But like, yes, when he finds out about that huge massacre that's happened, maybe he'll be a little bit pissed off.
Yeah.
But
what she basically says is, like, now that John and Ygritte have gotten together, she just wants him to be loyal to her.
Yeah. Because she doesn't have any allegiance, really, like, or not as strong of a one to Mance Rayder and all of this shit. She's like, we can just go off and do our own thing. I'm happy to do that. That's what I've done for most of my life.
Yeah, she's only there because, like, she's a wildling and she lives north of the wall and they really don't have any other option.
Totally. But yeah, her seeing through him so easily, it's kind of weird that she's the only one. Her and, I guess, Gareth.
That's true. Like, Gareth just thinks he's, well, yeah, that's a tough one. I guess no one really thinks he's telling the full truth because, like, you're right, they're basically going, look, you all need to go and scout out these places because we don't really think John's telling the truth.
Mm.
But also, I guess it was Mance, like, is sort of... Mance has basically been like, I'm going to take you at your word because you're the kind of person who at least doesn't want to break their word. You know, like, it's, I don't know, it just exists in this weird place at the moment.
Yeah. And I think Halfhand's plan, like, hey, kill me, that'll make them think that you're one of them. It kind of has worked, I guess.
That's true. That's true. You got to go pretty far over the line to kill someone.
Yeah. But so Ygritte's like, hey, we can do whatever. I'm okay with whatever political bullshit you want to do. But if you betray me, that dick ain't going to be on your crotch.
Yeah, that's right. She's going to make him an Unsullied.
Speaking of the Unsullied, the Brotherhood Without Banners are hanging around still. Arya's learning how to shoot an arrow properly.
Yep.
Whenever I love scenes of people teaching other people archery, because they always give them just the vaguest instruction of, like, make your arm higher.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Look where the arrow's meant to go and it will fly true.
Yeah, your brain already knows how to do it. Stop fucking it.
Get out of your own way.
Yeah. Some dumbass advice, but then he's like, or Arya is like, hey, there's some people in the bushes. Blow me down. It's the Bloody Red Witch.
Yeah, she left Stannis a couple of weeks ago. She didn't appear in that last episode, and we were wondering, the whole time, we're wondering, like Poochie, where is Melisandre?
Yep. Like Poochie, I was wondering, why am I a dog? Ah!
Very good.
I reckon that's what was going on inside Poochie's head. Who's Poochie?
But yeah, Melisandre has shown up here. She, last thing we heard her say was like, I've got a plan. And it involves someone with royal blood.
Well, who's here that has royal blood?
Well,
oh
no,
Gendo.
It's bloody Gendo the Smith.
Gendo Smith is in a lot of trouble because, like, the Brotherhood Without Banners, as much as they don't have banners, they do have a big bloody religious symbol right in the middle of them, with this guy who's been revived a billion times by this priest who believes in the Lord of Light.
Yeah, yes. So
they are...
It looks like they're on the same side as Melisandre, right?
Exactly. They're automatically affiliated with him. And they live by that.
Yep, they do.
Gendo, so, they sell him off, right?
Yeah, yeah. I forget what it's for, but Melisandre basically says, like, look, yeah, like, I'm going to use my right as a priestess of the Lord of Light to take this dude, but, you know, I'll give you some money or whatever. So, you know, you guys need money. You need that for food and weapons. So, hey, this works out for everyone. Every single person involved.
Yeah. She's also pretty freaked out that Thoros has been able to revive Beric a bunch of times.
Yes, true. Yeah. Yeah. She's done some magic stuff, but that is intense.
But it's so weird to be like, man, a shadow baby came out of my own pussy. But, dude, this guy standing up again, that's extra level shit. That's fucking crazy.
I mean, I can kind of see that. Like, you know, making a magical creature using a spell is, like, on the scale of things, pretty normal.
Sure.
Bringing a human being back from the dead 6 times is, you know, like it breaches the ultimate, you know, law of life. Like, I understand her being like, fuck, what's going on here?
Yeah. She seems to know so much about the Lord of Light, though, that it's strange that this surprises her, because, like, also, right at the end, before she leaves, they sell off Gendry and they're like, yeah, we need gold, sorry. Mm. She comes up to Arya, who's kicking up a stink, and she gives her this real weird little speech.
Yeah, because Arya is like, what are you doing? Why are you taking my one friend away? This is bullshit. She grabs Melisandre.
Yeah, and then Melisandre, like, grabs her right back and is like, Pisces, your star sign is looking real good this month. You're going to come into some money, and also you're going to shut your little brown eyes forever.
Yeah, yeah. You'll see some eyes and you'll close them, and there's darkness in you, which is very interesting. It sounds like a sort of precognitive prediction about Arya's future.
Well, I don't know about any of those words, but I reckon it's crook.
It's crook what she done.
Then we head over back to Theon and this janitor sweepy kid.
Yes.
Who has turned out not to be so sweepy at all. More sneaky than sweepy.
Yeah, very sneaky. Yeah.
He gives him a really good torture scene here.
Oh, man. It's like, yeah, from top to bottom, this scene is very well done. It's well acted. I think it's well written. And it made me physically cringe and look away.
This guy, dude, I don't say this lightly, but he's like my hero, the Joker.
In what way?
Because he doesn't give a fuck, and he's going to take down all this shit that you fake posers think is real.
he's got green hair.
Oh, man, that's so cool. He's a bit damaged, honestly, I reckon.
He likes to spread that damage around.
But he's totally the Joker.
He's the Joker, yeah. He just wants to cause chaos.
And funny, like, funny torture, where he's, like, being a bit charming and cheeky with it.
Yeah, totally. You want to see a magic trick?
You want to play a little game?
Yeah, yeah, that's very true. Because what he does, for the people listening who haven't seen this this episode or this show, which there are a surprisingly large amount of...
we should just start throwing in scenes that didn't happen.
Yeah, we said that last week. We didn't think of one for this week. We'll do it.
Did we?
We'll do it at some point. Yeah, we literally, we had this conversation.
Oh, fuck. Well, I plagiarized us.
Yeah. So this nameless boy, the janitor, he says, hey Theon, first he asks him, I think, what body part do you need the least? Mm. But then he says, if you can guess who I am. That's this scene, right?
I think he says, if you can guess where we are.
Yes. Yeah,
then,
yeah.
Then you win the game. Like, the game is over if you can guess where we are, or if I can make you beg me to cut your finger off.
Yes. Yep. Yes, you're
right. And so then he does a bunch of tricky little, like, oh, no, you figured it out. We're in Gripper's watch.
And yes. Yeah.
Eventually goes, by the way, I didn't say that I was going to tell the truth. You lose. And just tears a big slab of his fucking finger off.
So gross. Really gross. Like, props to the props department, because it looked real. Like, it just...
Props to the props department just sounds like something that comes over the speaker in a studio. Can we get the props to the props department, please?
Yeah,
I don't know what they're doing in makeup. There's heaps of props in the way. I don't know what's real makeup and what's fake makeup.
This is like loudspeaker stuff from like a Mel Brooks movie. Just funny little puns about movies. Yeah, it's horrible. I think, yeah, he tries to guess where he is and who he is. So he's like, we're Deepwood Mott and your Karstark's son who Rob betrayed. Like, you know, he thinks he's got it right. And,
yeah.
And
yeah, boy, he thinks he's in Carhold.
Yeah.
Which, again, very funny name because it just sounds like a garage.
Yes. And that is plagiarized from The Simpsons.
I'm not going to do anything original this week.
Great. Well, I guess this whole podcast is predicated on us talking about an existing show, so that's fine.
It's in the spirit.
But like you said 15 minutes ago when we started describing this scene very poorly, it's just a good scene of torture and it's very effective.
Oh, I loved it. Like, it's very straightforward. Nothing kind of, you know, happens. I mean, Theon loses a bit of his finger, but it's just real good characterization of this psycho who's captured Theon and we don't know who he is.
Yeah. And as with the previous episode, I think it was the previous episode where Theon basically is led in a circle back to that dungeon after starting to open up and become more vulnerable. This is just really pounding it into Theon that, like, you fucked up and you're going to get punished.
Yeah. And, like, he takes that little bit of vulnerability that Theon showed and throws it back against him. He's like, oh, you told me that you didn't want your daddy to be mad at you.
Mm, yes. Yeah.
Like, this guy's paying attention. And, yeah, it just a real good. And also, like, great acting from the guy playing the janitor guy. I forget his name.
Yes. Yeah.
But, Alfie Allen, like the straight man in the scene, basically it's always the unsung hero of any comedy group is the straight man,
because
it's like the hardest bit it makes the other bit laugh, get the laughs, and yeah, he's doing a real good job of being tortured there.
Totally, absolutely, that's a good point as well. Yeah, like, you feel his pain. That's why it's able to be an impactful and effective scene. He's great. Continues to be good in this show.
As does the guy who plays Robb Stark, I think. Just a good kind of commanding presence there. You can see how he's gotten into the situation he's in. As
totally. Why do you mention the guy playing Robb Stark?
Well, you see, next Benjamin, we go over to River Run, where Robb is meeting with representatives of the Frey clan, the Frey house. And they have not dressed up for the occasion. They're wearing like those little train spotter hats.
Yes. Yep.
And they know that they're in the powerful position here.
Totally. The Freys always, everyone in that family or in that house, they always look like their faces are slowly dripping downwards.
Yep. Just a bunch of melting fucks.
Exactly. But these melting fucks are in a hot spot here because they know they can twist Rob's arm. They've got him, basically.
Rob has absolutely fucked up by breaking his promise. And so they want him to apologize. And then they want him to give them Harrenhal, which I don't know why anyone wants that cursed fucking place, but all right.
Yeah, it looks awful and sad. I guess that fits the phrase.
Sure. Yeah, true. It must have some sort of tactical kind of value to these people because everyone seems to be after it.
Totally.
And also they want like a marriage in return for the marriage that Rob didn't see through.
Mm.
So they're like, hey, your uncle Edmure, Catelyn's sister, he's got to marry one of our fucking weird, gross sisters.
That are all like 12 years old.
Oh, man, it's like, it's not their fault that they're weird and gross. Their dad sucks, but, like, just the whole place is depressing.
Yeah, it's awful. As much as we have spoken about Rob being an absolute fucking idiot for breaking this oath, you can understand it on a personal level.
Oh, like, it was a poor move as a military commander, but he's a human being.
Yes.
And then, like, Edmure, who, like, I mean, I feel like everybody kind of gave him a little bit of a, hey, this is a shitty behavior. You need to live up to your promises. But then the second Edmure's head is on the chopping block, he's like, oh, I don't wanna. Can I pick which one?
Yeah.
He starts,
that scene, like, to be honest, we know exactly what's going to happen at the outset. Like, we know that Rob Stark is going to be like, hey, Edmure, you fucked that battle up. Come on, brother.
Yeah.
you know, just take one for the team here. And that's what happens.
Yeah. And good on him.
Yeah, sure. Yep.
You know, he didn't have to. He mentions that there's this law. He, I know my rights. I know my rights. Am I being detained? And he says, there's a law that no man can compel another man to marry. Very yes. interesting that, like, again, it's a male-dominated world here. And yep. they do absolutely are talking about men. Not a person can't compel another person. You can force a woman to marry a man. Oh, my God. What am I? Yeah. I'm not a lawyer, but that shit's cool.
Oh, but, mate. It's the best.
Forcing a man to marry another man? Get out of my face. This is a free, weird country.
Yeah, that's not in Game of Thrones. Everything else is, though.
And, yeah, speaking of Robb Stark and his bannermen, Roose Bolton.
Oh, just before we do this scene, I think it's worth mentioning that... The way that Rob convinces Edmure to do it, aside from guilting him into it for, you know, because of his failures, he just basically puts it on the table and says, we're losing the war. Like, we have less people than ever before. We are in a pretty shitty situation. We're losing. Like, they've won some battles, but because of the Tywin sort of getting back to King's Landing and pissing Stannis off, like, the whole situation is basically bad for the Starks, so they really need this.
Yeah, and the Freys have apparently a pretty significant military force.
Yes.
So, yep, hopefully they can use him because, yeah, his Robb Stark's existing bannerman, Roose Bolton, is having some din-dins with Jaime and Brienne.
Yes. Yeah, Brienne is in a lovely pink dress.
Oh, absolutely stunning. So wickedly talented. Brienne Skrebitschkebust.
She looks very uncomfortable.
Oh, she hates it. They both look like they're having a shithouse time because Jaime's adjusting to only having one hand and he's fucking up cutting his meat.
A little bit also... of Mr. Bean physical humor there.
Yeah. It's weird how halfway through that dinner, Jaime got up and pushed over a three-wheeled car.
Mr. Bean amputated is what I decided to call him.
Oh, Teddy.
So, yeah, a bit of a tense dinner scene here with Roose and Jaime and Brienne.
Roose seems like a fucking dick.
He does. He's acting like a dick.
Yeah. I mean, but, like... It's interesting how they've switched Jaime's character here because you feel for the guy at this point where he was this arrogant piece of shit.
Yes. I mean, I know there are people who throughout the entirety of the show have always hated Jaime, which is completely fair enough. He both does actual things that are shitty and acts like a douchebag all the time. But this storyline is absolutely meant to place him in the low status position.
Yeah.
Which I find effective.
Same. And Bolton kind of finagling himself into this high status position seems really gross because he's invited them to dinner to belittle them.
Yep.
He's deliberately made Brienne wear this dress to belittle her.
Mm-hmm.
And then, like, he does all these little dumb, like he's read The Art of the Deal power moves. Like refusing the drink.
He's like, refusing the drink. Yep.
And Jaime rightly sees through it. He's like, okay, dickhead, it's medieval times, as if you don't drink. Even are you going to fucking crash your horse, idiot? Drink.
Yeah, you were at your house. What are you not drinking for?
You brought the wine to this table, freak.
Yeah. But, like, also, yeah, making Jaime try and, cut up his, like, steak, like, giving him a big slab of meat that he has to cut up with one hand... Yeah, you're right. It's all power moves.
Yeah. And so then he's like, okay, Jaime, you can fuck off back to King's Landing. We understand that might help us in this war a little bit if we show mercy to you.
Totally. And like the plan all along was to send him back in exchange for the Stark girls.
Yeah. Well, that was Catelyn's plan.
That's true.
And Rob was like, we should hang on to him and... Well, because Thingo, who died last week, Karstark,
yes,
he wanted to just kill Jaime.
Yes, that's
Rob
right.
wanted to just keep him prisoner because he was like political capital.
Sure, could, sure.
And then it's like Roose is weirdly siding with Catelyn here because, which he was very not before. He was like, you need to lock her up. Lock her up! Lock her up!
Check her Raven Scrolls.
Yeah, remember.
Read her Raven Scrolls.
Benghazis the Great. not only is it not a place, but a person now. Anyway.
Okay, you're right. So that's a weird move.
He's making some strange move here. But he's like, okay, Jaime, you can go. But Brienne, that was treason, what you did. So, and then, he's like, we're going to deal with Brienne. We're going to do whatever, I don't know, kill her, lock her up.
I guess,
don't
know. I guess kill her, yeah.
And Jamie's like, no, don't do that. We're friends now. And Roose Bolton's like, I think you would have learned by now to, don't overplay your cut off fucking hand. I mean, position.
That was, yeah, I didn't like that line in the moment.
I fucking hated it.
Yeah.
It's just like, I get that it's meant to be him being like, you know, smart but a dick, and it doesn't really do either of them well.
No, it feels like a line that like one of the Chaos agents would say in Get Smart. Like, it's very silly. It's
totally
very, very silly.
It's such a Hanna-Barbera bullshit line.
Yes. Yes.
Yeah, you're right. But it's all fixed up and forgotten about because straight away we fucking fly over to the wall.
Yes, we do. Yeah. Something that we haven't seen much of is basically an action set piece. We've seen a few battles, a few little fights, but this is a CGI heavy action scene.
And I was bored by it, to be honest.
Yep, me too.
Because it was extremely like, I don't know, I didn't think Ygritte was going to die. I didn't think John was going to die. I didn't think anyone was going to fall off the fucking wall except for those faceless people in the distance who gives a shit. It was just, it seemed like, it's probably pretty scary to climb the wall.
Sure, yeah.
And it's a nice
wall.
Bit of flavor, but it was like almost padding.
Yeah, totally agreed. No one in that scene was going to die. I think it's just because of how it looked. Like, it was so CGI heavy and fake. No one's going to die in that scenario. It would really lack impact.
Yeah. I don't have a firm idea of how big this wall is either.
I think it's really big.
Oh, okay.
is that firm enough for you?
Yeah, no, sorry. I was thinking it was small, but I guess it's really big.
Yeah, it's really big. Yeah.
Oh, right. Okay, sick. Well, yeah, Gareth is like, the second something goes the least bit wrong, he's like, cut him loose!
Yes. Yeah.
Which was really funny.
It's good. It's also, like, I'm pretty sure, like, standard practice for mountain climbers, like, if, you know, if it's a danger of, well, I guess there's like half and half, but it's like if one person slips, they cut them loose so that six people don't die.
I guess. The rule, you should cut yourself loose.
Yeah.
You should have to promise that you'll be ready to cut yourself loose, but then if you don't, then people will be like, do it. And like, no, I'll do it. I'll manage.
Yeah, no, we'll be okay. Just like, you know, hang on more.
Imagine someone hanging out off there and they're like trying to convince him to cut himself loose. He's like, nah, look, I can, and he's just trying to do anything to get him not to do it. And he's like, no, I'll get lighter. And he takes like this huge shit as he's hanging there. He's like, see, you can carry me now. Yeah. I had that in me all day.
Very good. Very, very good. So one dies.
Nothing really happens. It's all just, you know, they're climbing the wall and guess what? It's hard.
Yep. Next scene.
Speaking of hard, it'd be very hard to match wits with Tywin and Olenna.
Very good segue.
Hanging out with each other back in King's Landing.
Yep, just a little one-on-one.
So they're talking about all these marriages that Tywin forced upon Cersei and Tyrion. Tywin's after Cersei getting married to Loras.
Yep.
And Olenna's like, nah, fuck that. And Tywin's like, but she's the most beautiful woman in the world. A whole family wants to fuck her. And then Olenna's like, nah, she's old. She can't have kids. She's useless. She's old. Fuck that.
Yeah, she's about to enter middle age and not be fertile, I guess is what she's implying.
Yeah. And then Tywin does a little implying of his own, going like, well, you don't want people to keep thinking of Loras as, you know, how they think of him. And Olenna says, oh, come on, he's a sword swallower through and through.
But yeah, very well phrased.
It's going to be absolutely fine. I don't really give a shit. And then, yeah, she, like, brings it round to Tywin being like, surely you've fucked a couple of lads?
Yeah, that was, yeah, sort of weird, honestly. Like, I guess were things more, what's the word, progressive in the Dark Ages?
I'm assuming it's sort of like, maybe like an ancient Greek kind of deal?
Yeah, yep, sure. Or even maybe it's like a, hey, you were in the army. Don't you guys all, you know, strip down and shower together sort of situation, yeah, maybe?
I think so. Whatever it is, they hate gay people in this world too. Nobody wants to be seen as being gay.
That's true. So, Tywin certainly doesn't have any respect for it.
So Tywin's like, I've never fucking swallowed a sword, like you put it. And then Olenna's like, all right, well, what about your two kids who fuck?
Yeah.
And he straight away comes back with like a, all right, okay, you don't have to do it. He doesn't have to marry Cersei. I guess I'll just make him a Kingsguard, and then he can never marry anyone, and that's the end of the Tyrells.
That's it. He's the last, he's the youngest. Well, what is he? He's the heir. He's the heir to the Tyrell house.
Yeah. Because we've heard about Olenna's son, someone else Tyrell.
Yeah.
And then, fucking.
Is it Mace? Loras. Is it Mace Tyrell who's the dude? Yeah.
Yes. Mace Tyrell is Olenna's son, who she said in the other episode is a dingbat.
Yeah. He's the papa of Loras and Margaery.
Yes.
Yeah.
So, Tywin snookers her. I don't know why he didn't just say that at first. Instead of having to bring all the stuff of like, well, everyone thinks your kid's gay. Why couldn't he just straight away go to like, hey, I've got this unbeatable move.
Yeah, I've got this trump card. I guess, I don't know. He seems to enjoy sparring with her.
True. They both do, because at the end she's like, oh boy, a guy who is everything people say he is. You do not see that much.
Yeah, but as a viewer, we're kind of like, oh, the bad guy won, right? Like, the bad guy won that scene, which is shit.
Yeah. And I wonder if that's why they're making him, like, so kind of, he fucking keeps going on at Tyrion about, like, you're a short little creep, aren't you? And then he's like, oh, fucking Loras loves dick. Mm. And if they give him all these, like, kind of, like, old man fucking bigot things.
Yes.
To make him a villain. Because otherwise, without that stuff, I don't know, man, he's kind of cool.
Yeah. I think we both spoke about when he was introduced to the show, like, all right, here's a character who knows their shit. He's like a smart military mind. He can see things objectively and rationally, and he takes action, and he's very, you know, he's a strong character.
And
I think I mentioned this last week, the world is starting to be divided into good and evil in this show, because I guess that clarifies a few, you know, storylines and a few attitudes towards certain characters, and they've basically slotted Tywin firmly into the evil camp by being a homophobe.
It's like, because without that stuff, he's just like, without being a homophobe and a bigot, he's just like a go-getting kind of... He's disrupting the paradigm, man.
He's disrupting the paradigm.
He's a bloody entrepreneur in a startup. But then if you make him hate gay people, he's an entrepreneur in a startup who people have found his Twitter history.
Yeah, exactly. Because his openly stated goal is to protect his family and ensure the legacy of his family. And there's nothing evil about that.
No. And look, like, he wants to rule the kingdom. Everyone fucking wants to rule the kingdom here, and he seems like he knows what he's doing. He seems competent, so
Everybody wants to rule the world.
That would make a great, great lyric for a terrible poem.
Okay. Might turn it into a song instead.
Not into music.
Okay.
Yes? Loras is kind of checkmated there by Tywin, but in the meantime,
yes,
he's having a little chat with Sansa Stark.
He's checking out his mate, Sansa.
So, fucking.
And he doesn't want to be anything. Doesn't want to be anything more than mates with Sansa.
Nah, they can be good buddies. That's fine. Everybody needs a friend.
They both have an interest in fabrics and wedding dresses.
Oh yeah, they both get super into the idea of their wedding. But then everything else around that, like, Loras is, like, overly, he's very much going, like, ugh, imagine spending time with you. Oh, God.
He really is. I really like how he plays it. He plays it very well. The actor,
Yeah. Just looking off into the distance. Just be like, oh, anything is better than this conversation. Jesus. But he's kind of following Marjorie's idea here of getting married off to Sansa, which I can't remember what her goal was there.
Marjorie's goal? I think it just helps out Sansa. It strengthens the Tyrell family by giving them a link to the North.
To the North, yes. Okay, yes. That's why Sansa's important, because Tyrion is going to be attempting to marry her. But in the meantime, him and his sister are sitting there. Finally, they have something a little bit in common here. They're both having to marry people they don't want to marry.
Yep.
And they're kind of half plotting about it.
They've been fucked over by their dad, and for once in this family, getting fucked by a family member is only a metaphor.
But then a pretty big fucking piece of information shows up here.
Oh yes.
Tyrion's going at Cersei, being like, okay, I need to bring this up. Why the fuck did you try and have me killed? Blah, blah, blah. They talk about it for a bit, and she doesn't admit it, but he figures out, oh, fuck, Joffrey tried to get me killed. Of course.
Yes. He's basically like, well, did you kill me? And she's like, no. And he's like, well, it must have been either you or Joffrey. And she's like, okay, I'm going to look over here now.
I'm a clever schemer who gets away with intricate plans, and Joffrey's a dumb idiot who would try and have someone killed in the middle of a field where everyone could see by someone who shouldn't have been near them.
Yes, yes, yes.
So then he's like, oh, fuck, okay, the king wants me dead. Do you reckon I'm in more trouble? And Cersei's like, yep, that guy is, that kid's a fuck, but his granddad's around and he'll probably behave himself while he's here.
That's it, yeah. Like, obviously Cersei has now given up on the any pretense of being able to control him, as we've sort of covered in previous weeks. Tywin appears to be in control, as we've just seen with his scene with Elena. He is the puppet master. He's controlling everyone, including Joffrey, we assume. But we know Joffrey's a reckless little cunt.
Yeah, yes, he is. He is a dirt bike riding, monster energy drink drinking motherfucker.
Yeah.
And he's going to... But yeah, Tywin the other week was like, I will bring that boy in line, don't worry. So it seems like maybe he is. Hopefully.
Sure.
Because Tyrion needs to marry that blood... He can't die. He's got to marry the Stark girl.
Yeah.
But he better tell her that because... And he just fucking tells her at the exact worst time.
Yes. Yeah, so Sansa, she's the guy like, oh, I'm gonna have a big, beautiful wedding at Highgarden. And so, like, she just loves the idea of this, like, beautiful, you know, rose garden-lined castle grounds. And, you know, she's totally gone romantic again, like she was at the start of the show where she had these feelings about Joffrey.
Yeah, or about the wedding to Joffrey, at least.
Yeah, sure, yeah.
And so, she's... bragging to Shay, in walks Tyrion. Oh boy, he's got some news.
Yeah. Yeah, he asks Shay to leave.
And yeah.
She doesn't.
Because Sansa's like, anything you can say to me, literally anything. There's not a topic in the world that would be inappropriate to say to the pair of us at once.
Yeah.
Fuck. And then Tyrion tries to be like, hey, seriously, Shay, sometimes you think you want to be somewhere, but maybe you don't.
Yeah, yeah.
But, he doesn't actually tell him here. He just,
no, we
like,
don't see it on screen.
No, he like opens his mouth and then fucking next week on the show. I couldn't think of a show that always used to have like a cut, like a hard cut to next week on.
Lost. Lost always had a cliffhanger.
Oh, okay.
Mm-hmm.
Cliffhanger. That always
that's
had a...
Yes.
I felt lost while I was watching it.
Okay, good. Very but yeah, nicely done.
So that, I assume, will deal with either that scene or the fallout of that next week. Because we cut over to the throne room where, once again, these fucking morons, Littlefinger and Varys, are just openly talking about their schemes in the fucking, like, the Oval Office.
Yeah, yep.
It's insane, or at least like the press briefing room or something. It's so fucking weird.
It is kind of like the Oval Office in that, and it doesn't make sense, but there's an element of like, if you're powerful enough to be hanging around in the Oval Office, then you'd assume that you'd also be aware of whether anyone's watching you or not. But
yeah, but it just reads as so silly. Like, it's literally the seat of power here. And people come and go all the time, but whatever. They had them there so Littlefinger could go like, I don't even like the chair. that was all it was for.
Yeah. It's just that sort of very simple shorthand thing of like, these guys are power brokers and they're in the throne room, remember?
Yeah. So they start kind of having their back and forth like, but I knew that you knew that I knew that you knew and did all of that shit. And Littlefinger's like, hey, I knew about Roz.
Yeah.
And then Varys is, he says his, I did what I did for the good of the realm shit again. And they have this little back and forth. And then, so this scene.
Yes.
People who are new to the show might have like heard of this phrase, chaos is a ladder.
Yeah.
Because Varys goes, ah, oh, what are you being such a dick for, Littlefinger? You'll throw us into a pit of chaos. And then Littlefinger says, chaos isn't a pit. Chaos is a ladder. It goes into this speech that I do not fucking understand at all.
Oh, really? I do.
I don't understand how chaos is a ladder.
I do. I can kind of explain. I want to get the monologue up, but I'll try and explain it without doing that. Essentially, the concept is that they live in a structured society where the two of them basically make a living undercutting the structure of that society. So, you know, they're spies, they break rules, they trade information, and they take advantage of everyone involved in that society by doing that. You know, like they undercut it all. And Varys is doing that with the purpose of stabilizing that structure, of creating more stability and peace. But Littlefinger's perspective is that when you disrupt that structure, i.e. you create chaos, then what you're doing is creating a ladder of opportunity. So when you create chaos, it gives you the chance to rise through that structure to the top rather than, as Varys implies, sink everyone into a pit. Does that make sense?
But a ladder is so solid. How could it be chaotic?
It's solid.
I always got stuck on the fact of like, how can you climb something that is random? How are you arrogant enough to think you're in control of this? But
well,
I guess Littlefinger is arrogant.
He that's exactly right. He is arrogant enough to think that if he creates chaos, he will use that chaos as an opportunity to further his own purposes. He can see the ladder in the chaos because he's creating it. He's navigating it. And you're right, it's an arrogant point of view. He thinks he's smart enough to see a ladder in chaos, but that is basically what that speech is saying. And I think it, because it sounds so cool, and I think it sounds cool, I think it sounds
it's delivered very well. And the manner in which the show, like, the way that what happens underneath this speech is the most, like, cinematic thing that the show has done, the most filmic thing or whatever. Like,
absolutely. And it also reinforces everything he is saying.
Yes, exactly. It's a fucking montage of Littlefinger winning.
Yes, yes.
Because what do we see? We see Roz is dead.
Yep.
Fucking Joffrey has crossbowed her to death, and he seems to have loved it. He walks away like he's just come.
Yep.
The ship sails away from Sansa.
Yes. So basically we're seeing the aftermath of Tyrion telling Sansa that he has to marry her, which means that Littlefinger is going to leave her there. The ship is going to leave her there. She's not marrying Loras. She's not going to Highgarden. She's not escaping King's Landing. She's being forced to marry Tyrion, and she's going to be stuck in King's Landing.
Yeah, which is a shit fucking situation for her.
Yeah.
Do we see other stuff? I can't remember. But whatever it is, we cut between all these different things, and it looks real cool, and it's filmed well with good music underneath, and the speech, yeah, like, it's delivered well. I just never understood what chaos is a ladder meant. And then it was one of those things where people kept saying it again and again, like this yes. little catchphrase.
Yeah.
And it was like, Ramalama ding dong to me. It was just a catchphrase that meant nothing.
Right. But yeah, it's the implication is that you have to be brave and intelligent and kind of a douche to take advantage of chaos and climb the ladder.
Sure. Well, yeah, that's what Littlefinger intends to do. And the whole, like, climbing the ladder thing, and then the idea of the climb being the name and the climb up the wall, it kind of lamely transitions over to John and Ygritte getting up to the top of the wall. Like, that was a little on the nose, maybe.
Yes, I agree. Any time that they do this, that where they set up a nice metaphor and then they make it a literal thing, is a little clunky to me.
Totally. I agree. But it's, you know, they seem happy to be up there. I got really nervous that they were standing too close to the edge and not moving.
Well, you know, the wall is really, really high.
Is it? Oh, fuck, that makes it worse.
Yeah, yeah.
And they look out wordlessly onto a beautiful view of the southern part of Westeros.
Yes, which I did like. I disliked the literalization of the metaphor, but that shot, the music, it all worked in that moment.
Totally, and it's the most like just kind of. I wish I could use the word epic again.
I reckon trying to take it back. We've tried to on our other podcast, I'm sure.
All right, let's give it a go. Okay. It was the most epic for the win scene that it was very well done.
Mm. It is. It is an epic vista. It looks beautiful. It's a big, like, they've, you know, accomplished something big. They didn't die. Yeah. And it almost, you know, like it feels like it's opening up a new plot line to these characters, which is also interesting.
Almost like one of those old Hollywood Western kind of views. It almost looked like a big painted on thing, but in a cool way.
Yeah. I agree.
So, yeah, Littlefinger's kind of making his plays now. Yep. Tywin's got a pretty firm grip over everything, but Joffrey looks like he's going even more psycho, so don't know where that's going to go. Sansa's fucked again.
Yep.
Because she's got to marry fucking Tyrion now. Shay's going to be furious about that. What else is going on? Cersei hates the idea that she's got to marry Loras, but she'll deal with it.
Yes, we don't know what Loras is going to do, but he seems so ineffectual that he probably is just going to have to go along with it.
Yeah.
But I guess the interesting thing there is, what is Margaery going to do about that?
Yes, because she has some head on her shoulders.
Yes.
Some head on her shoulders. Bloody Roose Bolton is kind of making weird plays with Jamie and Brienne.
Yeah. The Freys and the Starks are going to join together, we assume.
Yeah. Ed Muir has come through with a bloody... Hail Mary at the end.
Mm.
And creepy janitor is still torturing Theon.
And also, Gendry's been shipped off for some kind of Lord of Light thing.
Yep, and Samwell is singing in the snow, the fucking idiot.
Yeah.
There's a Thanks for helping,
on.
Sam.
We didn't see Daenerys.
No, yeah, no Essos this week.
And was that the only one we didn't touch base with? I think it might be.
Yeah, I guess so, yeah.
Hmm.
Yeah, good episode all round, I think.
Yeah, I hope that not to patronize you, but I hope that the sort of exploring what that climb monologue means a bit more makes it a bit better.
So I think I think I always understood it and never understood the impact that it had on people who were like, this speech is awesome.
Right,
I love the way that it was filmed, but I guess I never really I always put my own thinking it was dumb onto Littlefinger's, like, I never really took it as how important Littlefinger thought it was and how right he thought it was.
Yeah. Which is the key thing about it. It's basically like a crystallization of everything that Littlefinger thinks about the world. And
yeah,
the fact that the show is presenting a couple of victories for him underneath it sort of implies that he's right, but it's just his very sociopathic view of the world, I think.
Totally, yeah. And I think I always sided more with Varys' particular sociopathic view of the world.
Sure, which is that you can manipulate everyone around you as long as you appear to have a noble goal.
Exactly. He's fucking Mark Zuckerberg. He just knows everybody's information, and he's going to use it against him one day.
Yes.
You hear that, Mark? I know that you're fucking skimming every podcast for mentions of your name. Well, here I am, and I'm not afraid to say it. I want a job at Facebook.
I just want to apologize on behalf of the show to Mark. We love you, Mark. Please don't use our data against us.
I don't love you, Mark. I love Tom and Travis more.
Oh, really?
No, I don't remember which was which.
Tom's the crazy one who's into aliens.
Oh, the drummer.
The drummer is Travis.
Oh, okay. Whatever.
Travis, he's a good drummer. I was we're talking about Blink 182 here, and I was very much into them as a teen.
I used to like them a lot back in the day, but I never really, like, it was that thing where me and my friends always thought that they were just the funniest people because of the little skits they do in between their songs on their live albums.
Yeah, I remember being a primary schooler. No, it must have been early high school, and the older kids on the back of the bus talking about the conversations that Blink 182 had on their live record, and everyone cracking up about it. And, mate, it's what got me into comedy.
Same. It was that and, like, the Uncle Fucker song from South Park.
Yeah, exactly. Anyway, that's the end of the episode, The Climb. I don't think we have any non-sealed section emails to discuss this week, and I think we've just done plenty of sort of post-recap discussion of the episode. So thanks, everyone who's watching along for the first time. Thanks for listening. We'll see you next week for, I think, the episode is called The Bear and the Maiden Fair.
Cool. Episode 7 of Season 3.
Yes, exactly. So, thanks for listening. We'll see you next week. And now it's time for the
Sealed Section.
Welcome to a little section that I like to call Sealed.
Or. That was a seal, by the way.
Yeah, so, I got it.
That chaos is a ladder speech.
Yes.
I can't remember if we were talking about this on this show or just in real life, but the thing of what happens to Littlefinger, his death.
Yeah.
And how, sorry if I'm repeating myself because I genuinely can't remember if this was on the podcast or not, how people were really disappointed with how, like, sort of ineffectual he was towards the end, and how, not mundane, but just kind of non-grand his death was.
I think we've touched on it before, but we've not, like, I think we held off because, yeah, this speech was coming up.
Yeah, so this speech is the thing that made people think Littlefinger was fucking Machiavelli.
Yes, absolutely. Absolutely it was. Yeah, and like like we said in the non-sealed section, it's his point of view. But the reason that people built him up to be Machiavelli is because the show makes it seem like he's right.
Yeah.
And, yeah, and that little, like, I don't necessarily entirely disagree with him on like a fundamental philosophical level. Like, I think in that world, if you treat the moments of chaos and confusion and shifting loyalties as opportunities to manipulate the situation to your benefit, then hey, if you pull it off, you're probably going to go well. But it still relies on you being the smartest, most effective person in the situation.
And I think a big thing for me, and why I think Varys' idea of like protect the realm and set it up and make sure that it's all safe and sustainable, is because it's a very short term view that Littlefinger has of like, I can get to the top in this fucking moment of fury. Yep. Everyone will be running around and I can jump on that throne. But then it'll crumble from under you because you're at the top of that same ladder that's all fucked and chaotic.
Yeah, yeah. It sort of means that you always have to be like, you're in that, like this one sort of, what's the word for it? Just like this one sort of center point, like this, the eye of the storm, but there's always going to be a storm around you. So you always have to be like battening down the hatches. Like you never get to stop.
Constantly moving with the storm. And then probably the storm will just fucking hit you with some lightning anyway.
Yeah, totally. Absolutely. Yeah.
So like it's a ladder in a very brief, for a brief period of time. It's like a more of a stepping stool or something.
Sure, yeah. It's like when you're like hopping over a lily pad in a river. Like the lily pad's going to sink into the river.
Yeah, I do that all the time.
Yeah, me too. Me too. In late 90s platformer games.
But yeah, this is definitely the thing that made people go like, okay, Littlefinger's winning the Game of Thrones.
Yes. Yeah.
And it's cool. Like it is like he is kind of, and so is Ramsay. They're both like, combine them and you get yourself the Joker.
Yeah, yeah, totally.
And that seems to be the only type of character that people on the internet really seem to love.
Yes, yes, very true. I think that the reason that I was disappointed that Littlefinger left the show wasn't like because I liked him, but it was because he had the best moment in the show on a cinematic level, like you said. Like, it was just really well done. And if you have an interesting villain who thinks he's smart, he's probably going to say some at least engaging and interesting things.
Yeah. I think it, as a moment of just kind of the building this tone of, like, pointlessness to all this squabbling that Game of Thrones has, the way that his whole arc is like totally that the entire mission statement of the show.
Yeah, sure. Yeah. Yeah, yeah.
Him building that's up, fair. Being this massive thing, and then it's just like, oh, it's just a knife to the throat because I got caught because I'm not as smart as I thought I was.
Yes. Yeah, yeah, totally.
Yeah, anyway, I'd love this fucking slow build up with Ramsay too.
Isn't it just, it's great. It's, like, I hate it in the moment. It makes me feel bad because it's so well done.
What a fucking villain. He's so good. And yep. I think, like, season 7, we've talked about this before, was just, like, a touch disappointing after 6.
Yep.
And I think it's Ramsay being gone.
Yeah, he was one of the great villains. Certainly this after long... Joffrey was gone.
Yeah. And he, the fact that he's been built up before Joffrey's out of the picture, and it's this slow build where you kind of end up taking him for granted before he's really fucking shit up.
Yeah, yeah, sure, yeah.
Yeah, I love it.
He is not someone who's outsmarted either. He's just outgunned, basically.
Yeah, yeah. Like he nearly gets away with it.
Totally. He, like, the only reason he doesn't is, I guess, because he's just like, fuck it. Like, I just want to go for it. I don't really care if I die either. Like, he's more of a joker than Littlefinger is, because he genuinely is insane and genuinely just wants to see everything burn around him.
Yeah. He's a joker and he's a midnight toker, man.
Nice. Should we read some emails?
Yeah, sure.
Okay, we've got one from Tabitha. Tabitha is another person I've played Dungeons & Dragons with. She lives in Canada and is a listener of both this show and our other show.
All right.
So her subject line is Daenerys is a turd.
Now, hold on. You gave me a lot of information about Tabitha, but now I'm starting to really learn who this person is.
Yeah.
A foul mouth.
So, and this is a perspective on our podcast that we've not got yet. So here's the email. Hey, guys. I've never actually watched the show, but I've read the books and have always been curious about how the show deals with the story and characters. I was just never curious enough to bother committing to the show, so this podcast has been great. Thank you for listening. I was wondering about your thoughts on Daenerys' leadership capabilities based on the show. I've always found the level of hero worship her character gets strange because she's kind of a shit human being. In the books, she pats herself on the back for going to numerous cities and freeing the slaves, but then just leaves them there to slaughter each other and rot to death. She makes no attempt to establish a new societal structure that can help these people flourish, so most of them end up dying anyway. To me, she seems like one of the worst options for leading Westeros. She has no idea how to lead, how to take care of people, and every time she's faced with a problem, she just gets her dragons to burn it down. She's completely detached from the consequences of her actions, which does not make a good ruler. Quote, the man who passes the sentence should swing the sword. A bit shite, if you ask me.
Is that quote Winston Churchill? Who's that?
Yeah, I believe it's Churchill.
Yes.
A bit shite, if you ask me. Anyway, there's my rant. I was wondering if in the show her actions come across differently. Cheers, Tabs. So what do you think?
I firstly think that's a really good question because, it's weird in the show because that same shit does happen.
Yeah.
And people kind of address it to some extent. Like her advisors and shit mention it to her and you kind of see it a little bit in the background. But I think maybe the biggest difference is that Emilia Clarke plays Daenerys with a lot of likability and like as just a heroine, the way that she's portraying the character is pretty straightforward.
Yeah, I agree with that to an extent. I am one of the people who, when it was starting to happen in terms of her gaining power, I thought it would make sense for her storyline to be that she goes mad like her relative did.
Yeah.
You know, like she very quickly comes into power. She is has a following of people who are just absolutely devoted to her because of the circumstances in which, you know, she gains those followers. And she starts to let loose. There's that scene in that episode where she burns that guy. It's the Tarly guy, right? It's Tarly.
Yeah.
It's Randall Tarly and the oldest brother of Sam.
Yeah.
And they just refuse to submit, and so she burns them to death in front of their army.
And there's little flashes of stuff like that the whole way through the show, really. But then she's also just it's such a sympathetic portrayal of the character.
Mm.
For the most part, and she has
advisors who are really attempting to steer her in the right direction.
Yes, and are kind of doing it well. So we haven't really seen her in a position where, like, either she's pushed into a corner or that she has unlimited free reign to use her power however she wants. So I would love it if it started to go more in that direction because the seeds are planted there in her character.
Yes,
and if they choose not to have those seeds grow into vengeful, crazy plants, then that's probably a poor decision. And it would be done, in my mind, because of the hero worship that Daenerys does get from a fan base who I think likes her for her being a powerful woman, I guess.
Yeah, I think personally, I maybe projected a bit into those scenes or into the show because I really think that's the most interesting arc for her character is for someone to come from an awful position, go through a lot, gain power, but then because of their inability to deal with that power, kind of take it too far and go crazy. I think that's an interesting plot arc.
And Daenerys is Beyonce.
Yeah.
She's like this super powerful woman who wouldn't give a fuck about you. You're a fly to her. Fuck you, is what she would say the second she laid eyes on you. And everyone's like, yes, please. Oh, my God. Choke me out. Kill me, please. Hang me in the village square, Beyonce. I love it.
Yeah, I think that's probably fair. But then, so the other side of the whole equation is that we've sort of found out from George R. R. Martin that his whole, the whole kind of core of this story was always going to be Jon Snow and Daenerys Targaryen.
Yeah.
So
that's why he called the books a poem about Jon and Danny.
That's right. That's right. I mean, we haven't read the books, but I'm pretty sure that's what they're called.
Yeah.
It sort of makes me worry about that coming to fruition. It implies that they're both going to be heroes.
It'd be a hell of a thing if they followed through on what's been set up and made Daenerys a season 8 villain, essentially.
Yeah, yeah.
Because she has the capacity to be it, and if Jorah has to drive a sword through her throat, and not in the way that he wants, then...
Yeah, not a traditional sword swallower.
Oh, not through and through at all.
No.
But yeah, that's an interesting question, and I really hope that, she doesn't just end up being... fucking Luke Skywalker.
Yes. Yeah, yeah. Totally agree. On the same page. There's a bunch of other questions. There's a note. There's just a note from Michael. I thought I'd read that out just to appease any of the listeners as well.
Buy milk.
Thank you, Michael. He says, I love the podcast, blah, blah, blah. I hate to be the quote, well, I read the books and guy, but... I thought this might clear
up.
It's
cool that you're not there, Michael. It's good that you're not doing that. We'll see you next week, everybody.
he wants to clear up something about Grey Worm. So he says, in the books, it's explained that the Unsullied are given a new name every day to prevent them from establishing any form of identity. So they pick an adjective and a noun, and it's at random. Yeah. So Grey Worm having his name on that day when he was freed... And picking
that
name
literally on that day.
Yes, exactly, exactly. So,
that's sick.
Yeah, it makes so much more sense.
But then wouldn't it be so confusing at parties?
Well, I don't know that they went to many parties.
No, they did.
Oh, okay.
It's actually pretty sick being an Unsullied.
I guess if you can't. You know, if you got no ball, well, do they have no balls or no balls and no dick?
I think it's just a fucking mannequin down there.
Okay. All right. Makes it hard to party then, in my opinion.
Dude, not the way I do it.
how do you fuck with
my nose.
Oh, hell yeah. That's cool shit.
It's doggy style still because I'm sniffing a butt.
All right. That is good shit. thanks, right. Mike. Michael's from New York, so you know that's cool.
Oh, sorry.
Hey, we're talking here.
How about we save a couple of emails for next week? What do you reckon?
There's just another one. That's just a brief one. Kieran says, "Hey,
all right.
I'm a huge fan of Game of Thrones and also Filthy Casuals and this show, which is nice. He just wanted to say he goes to college with the actress who plays Stannis' daughter, Shireen.
Oh shit."
Yeah, so she's there doing, like, performing arts and stuff, and so is Kieran. So
that's very cool.
Yeah,
of course she's studying performing arts, yeah, because she's done that.
Yeah, it makes
sense.
She
might have been doing something like Jack Gleason is now, where he's off doing, like, a physics degree or something, I think. Maybe he's done it by now.
He must be smart.
Nah, idiots get degrees too.
I guess if you go to do a degree, you're learning stuff, which means you didn't have that knowledge to begin with.
Yeah, exactly. Only fucking dumbasses go to school. What do you mean you didn't know the times tables? Fuckwit.
Yeah. Yeah, nice. Is that why you dropped out twice?
Huh?
Is that why you dropped out twice? Because you're too smart for it?
I didn't drop out twice. It was three times. So
I need to go and learn maths, clearly.
Wait, maybe it was just twice.
Oh, dear.
I don't give a fuck, man. No school can hold me down.
but yeah, we've got a few other emails that we can save for upcoming weeks. Thank you for everyone who's emailed in. and tweeted and commented on the Facebook posts. It's really nice to have these discussions with all of you. Next week, as we said halfway through this episode, we'll be talking about The Bear and the Maiden Fair, Episode 7, Season 3 of Game of Thrones. Email is ariatalkingtomepod@gmail.com. Send your emails in.
Please.
Please. Please send them in. And
yeah.
That's it.
We'll see you bloody next week.
Yeah, we'll see you next week. Thanks for listening, and goodbye.
Goodbye and farewell.